And next, please help me welcome Kevin reading the 12 traditions.
An alcoholic, my name is Kevin.
Kevin.
It's at 12 Traditions Alcoholics Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting and declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. Nine, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is a spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. Okay, we have a handful of presenters, each with about 20 minutes or so. Please welcome our first presenter from Scottsdale, the Area 3 Delegate, Suzette.
Hi, everybody. My name is Suzette, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Suzette.
And that's contrary to what we do in general service, because in general service we use our first and our last names. But because we're being audiotaped, I'm not going to do that today. I've asked not to do that. But I did want to bring that up because it's something that we use in general service, and that's because we're not anonymous amongst ourselves. So my sobriety date is February 12, 1993, and I owe that my sobriety to a higher power that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous and to the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who came before me. I say that because had it not been for the structure that we're going to talk about today, obviously we wouldn't be talking about it. And that if someone didn't come before me and start to lay down the groundwork, then this would all be a workshop. Interesting enough, I'm feeling like the uneducated kid on the block because I'm a panel 60 delegate, which means it's my first year and I'm pretty green. My service experience in general service, what we term as general service, this would be my 13th continuous year of service for general service, but I say that because with my sobriety date being in 1993, my sponsor taught me about service, and that this woman taught me that any type of service that we do, we don't minimize that, because anytime I'm thinking about doing something for you, I'm not thinking about myself, and I need to recognize that that's service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just going to give you a little bit of experience from my standpoint in sobriety. I got sober in a very rural community of about 2,000 people. I may not appear as if I was the youngest person there, but I'll have to tell you that when I walked in, I mean, no offense to anybody, but I thought I had arrived at a Q-tip convention. And everybody had gray hair, that's what I mean. And the town that I lived in was a retirement community. So trying to get sober at the age of 30, which for me, or in that community, was very young, because Alcoholics Anonymous was young in that community also, It was a little tough. So what I did for me was my sponsor taught me to embed myself within the service of that community, and I did that and got the opportunity to serve at many different levels. The same type of structure that we have here. The only difference is that we do not have an intergroup. And I know that might not be important to people that have intergroups, but sometimes we talk around that topic like someone knows what an intergroup person, a liaison is, or what an intergroup is. And if we could just take the time to describe that, then we could all get a better understanding to be on the same page. So for me, I had the opportunity to learn what went on in that small community, and then it didn't seem like it was enough, and my sponsor was wiser than I and suggested I become the general service rep or the GSR of our my home group. I did that and got the opportunity to then be their DCM and get involved with area service, which is here in Arizona, it represents the entire state, but that doesn't mean that in all states that they only have one area. But in the state of Arizona, it's Area 03. And through that, I got the opportunity to serve as your Arizona state treasurer, and then serve as your alternate delegate. And then just last year, in November, a year ago, I was elected to be your state delegate. Now, just like any service position, when I was the GSR, I had no idea what that meant. When I was the DCM, I had no idea what that meant. When I was elected as the area treasurer and the panel chair of one of the committees, I had no idea what that meant. Along with alternate delegate, I can tell the incoming delegate what that means. But just like any position, serving as your delegate, I still have no idea what that means. But what I do know is that one principle that my service sponsor taught me was, she said, just show up and the rest will come. And that's what I've done, is I've just showed up. And through showing up, I've gotten the opportunity to meet a whole bunch of fabulous people and to learn about the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. And not only about the steps and the traditions, but the concepts and the warranties. I had no idea when I was elected alternate delegate. I went to my service sponsor and I said, can you tell me something about these concepts and should I know about them? And she very graciously did something for me. She said, you know, the concepts are in the service manual. They're short form and long form. I live in the long form. But they might be a little hard for you to understand, so let me shoot you a Word document that explains how to apply those concepts in your family. And it's not AA approved. It's important to say that for me as the Arizona delegate. But it really helped me to understand, to simplify what the concepts are. And basically it's how the conference, for lack of better words, behaves when we all get together. And so what that has done for me as a delegate is that I don't know about you, but when the concepts were read, I get tears in my eyes. And the reason I get tears in my eyes is that when I was growing up as a child or even growing up in sobriety, I had no idea how to express my voice. And if I expressed my voice, then what I did was, it was always inappropriate. Meaning, you know, I'd lash out or I'd be quiet and I would kill you, I would manipulate you with my silence. Or I'd manipulate you with my yelling. So the structure gives me a way to communicate with you, and hopefully we're all on the same playing field on that communication. And the conference, the concepts do that for me. They say, okay, this is how we're all going to try and get through this conference, or how I'm going to learn to stand up in front of you, or how I'm going to learn to communicate to you my ideas, and how I'm not going to force those down your throat so that you hate me for wanting to do that. And so in my 11 months of experience, I've gotten the opportunity to, I'm just going to tell you briefly, Conference topics come out February 12th, which is my sobriety date. So this sobriety celebration, I spent reviewing conference topics. It was a new experience because I had never thought that 1,000 page of background material would come for me to review on my 17th sobriety birthday. But it did. Not my plan, but God's plan. And so I got the opportunity to do that. And in our service structure for Arizona, the delegate reviews those topics in the background and decides how those are going to be dispensed to the committees. So I got the opportunity to do that. And then the committees review that, and we meet and we talk about these conference topics. And topics are just suggestions or your voice about the way you think Alcoholics Anonymous should or shouldn't operate. To keep it really simple. Those that hang around with me and go to service committee workshops with me, they laugh at me because I equate the conference structure to baking cookies. Now, one might think it's pretty simple to make cookies as long as you follow the recipe. But when you've got 131 people or several groups and states trying to decide how you're going to bake those cookies and what is going to go into them, you can have a lot of loving discussion about that. Sometimes spirited in nature, but always filled with love and tolerance. And that was my experience, has been my experience so far in discussing that, the topics that people believe. Sometimes myself, I found myself in the middle of a conference, or actually of an area topic or a conference topic that I feel very passionate about, and don't always know how to express that. So after the topics were dispersed, we have what's called a pre-conference topic assembly, and we discuss those topics. Now, in between that time, it's the delegate's responsibility to kind of know about those conference topics, especially the committee that you're assigned to, and the Arizona area is assigned to corrections. Now, the interesting part about that is that I've had the opportunity to visit the jails, but not where they would let me in and out whenever I wanted to go. So in my small community in rural Arizona, I didn't know anything about corrections. So here we go again. You know, I get the opportunity to learn something. Still don't know what I'm doing, but read the work read the topics, ask questions, and thank goodness for those past delegates, past trustees, for those that have come before me, because for me, I'm willing to say, you know, I don't know, and how do I find out, and what should I do? And my sponsor told me those would be the most precious words that I ever used in any type of service that I do. So I have gotten the opportunity to visit, to be at the conference, which the 12th tradition or the 12th concept talks about that. For me, it was very spiritual. That's not always the delegate's experience, but what makes it spiritual is just what I said to start off with, was I never knew how to express myself to you, and I never thought that what I had to say was worthy enough for you to listen to. And the structure and the conference allows the opportunity for not my voice, but your voice to be heard. And that's what I'm charged with doing, is carrying your voice, of course, with the practicing the right of decision, which is that if there's more information presented that changed the way that I think that my area would think, then I have that right to change our vote or way we would think on a certain topic. And all I can say to you is that until you've experienced it, you can't describe it to somebody. But there are two words that come to my mind every time I think about my conference experience. One of them is the action word love. How loving and tolerant the 131 members were towards each other. And then the action to see them, all of the principles that I had been taught in Alcoholics Anonymous, to see those in action for, they call it conference week, but I can tell you that from the time you step off of the airplane until the time you get back on the airplane 10 days later, there's what I was doing for me was I was soaking up all that love and all that tolerance and watching people do what my sponsor had talked about. You know, it's different when you see that in your home. For me, in my home group that at that time was 10 people. By the way, I do have a home group. I should say that, huh? Happy Valley group meets on Wednesday nights at 7 p.m. Ask Jim. He's always there, and he knows that I'm not always there. And I just say that to say that really lightly, you know. I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous not to take myself too seriously, and I'm absolutely a serious person. But I got to see in the conference the love and the action that we talk about in these, for me, in the small rooms, that, you know, we're all here for a primary purpose. And I don't know about you, but I take that serious, and that's to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And it doesn't matter what form that takes, whether we're talking about changing a period to a comma in a pamphlet, to what one person might think, you know, why are we discussing this at length, you know, to the other side of, you know, let's change the pictures in, it sure beats sitting in a cell for the corrections committee, you know, that's important to somebody. And it's not up to me to decide if that's important to whether we should discuss it or not. It's just that it's there and we should discuss it. And then after coming back from the conference and then sharing with the Arizona area what happened in that conference, I get the opportunity to travel around Arizona. And I started to say to my husband last week, we got the opportunity to take a 2-week vacation, only he reminded me I wasn't on vacation because during that vacation I fulfilled 2 service commitments on vacation. But I started to say that, oh, this is the 5th weekend, not continuous weekend, that I didn't have the opportunity to serve Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't learned balance yet, and I haven't learned the word no yet. So maybe in my 2nd year I'll have more experience with that, or I can ask somebody, how is it that you do that? But I haven't gotten there yet. But what I know is that I love serving Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love being available. And I love having the opportunity to listen to your voice. And I love the opportunity to carry your ideas and your voice to the General Service Conference, or to walk through with you how to submit a topic to the General Service Conference topic. I love that. And if you ask me to come at, you know, 11 o'clock at night, you know, or to be here at 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to be there because I don't ever want to miss the opportunity to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Thank you.
Thank you, Suzette. Our next presenter is from San Diego, California. Please help me welcome past delegate Gail.
Thank you, Greg. My name is Gail, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Gail.
And I brought a bunch of stuff up here, not because I'm going to read a lot to you, but it's kind of a security blanket here. My conference report, AA comes of age, and there is a service manual down at the end of the table. So those are things I always hang on to and refer to when I'm not sure what I'm going to say. Thank you, Tim, for inviting me to share here. And everyone for being here. I was just at the Grapevine meeting before this, and I was so impressed and so grateful to have been there and to hear that sharing about the Grapevine and experience these young people writing articles and submitting graphics and artwork and jokes and to the Grapevine. That really warms my heart. And I just want to tell you a little bit about my experience in general service. I'm an immediate past delegate. I was a panel 58 delegate from San Diego Imperial area, which covers only 2 counties in California. We're probably one of the smaller areas, certainly the smallest in California. Geographically, we're just those two counties. Sometimes that can be an advantage because we can drive everywhere, anywhere where we have an area assembly meeting in just a couple of hours usually. But People can also leave early. You know, it's like they're, you know, they plan two things in the same day, you know, so they don't stay for the whole area assembly meeting. You know, by noon, we have most of the business in the morning because by noon people start to leave after lunch. And compared to South Dakota, where I've served in general service, Larry and I lived there for a little while, they had weekend assemblies, kind of like probably you do in Arizona. And the area assembly meeting would be on Saturday afternoon, and then they would have other things in connection, you know, a banquet and a speaker and other meetings, and of course committee meetings would be going on, but people would be there for the weekend, so everybody stayed for the whole area assembly meeting at least. So there are advantages to being small, but there are advantages to being as big as the state of Arizona too. So but I started service actually in San Diego. Larry and I moved there in 1973 after we got married. We actually met in an AA meeting in 1972. I got sober in Fargo, North Dakota, June 1st, 1972 is my sobriety date. And later that year, I met Larry at a meeting. He just was there. He was kind of the only young person around. And he was reading How It Works at a meeting. He was leading this meeting that I walked into, and I'd never heard anybody do that before. We didn't do that at that time in Fargo. Nowadays they do. But I thought that was pretty unusual, and I sort of did a double take, but I'd already sworn off men, so I wasn't really interested, you know. Well, one thing led to another, and we fell in love, got married, and moved to California within about 3 or 4 months there. I don't recommend that by any means. We had a lot of growing up to do. And but Larry was always interested in general service, always reading AA Comes of Age, always paying attention to the area assembly, what was going on there, being a GSR and all of that. And I really was not interested in that at all. I wasn't really interested in staying in AA for the rest of my life, actually. You know, it's, he sort of, you know, I followed along. I got interested too, and we didn't have much of a structure and guidelines in San Diego in the early 70s, and so we had our election, and the delegate was chosen, and the alternate delegate, or actually we didn't even have an alternate delegate. We had an area chairperson who served as the alternate delegate, and then we had a vice chair who would fill in wherever. You know, if the chairman had to move up, then the vice chair moved into the chairman's position. But we couldn't get a secretary. Nobody wanted to be the secretary. So an old-timer said, "Gail, how about you?" I thought, oh my gosh, I'm just so honored. You know, and so I said, yeah, I could do that. And so I started and took minutes, and that meant I was also the registrar. We didn't have a registrar at that time, you know, so it was all one position. And I sent out these postcards to the GSRs. Five times a year, we had five assemblies. So every known GSR got one of these postcards. I hand-typed them and said, you know, when the next assembly was, where it was going to be. Gosh, now when I think about how easy it is to get the information out to people, you know, and the great lengths I went to, you know, to make sure, of course, I was going to be the best secretary, of course, that anybody had ever seen in that area, naturally. But unfortunately, we had to move away in September of that year, so I had to give up that position, and we moved to South Dakota. I got a little bit active there. Larry became the PI chair in South Dakota, and so we stayed active. I became the GSR of our home group in Pierre. And so, but we came back to San Diego in 1980, and wouldn't you know, the first assembly we went to in September of 1980, they were having the secretary resigned, and they were looking for a new secretary. And so somebody said, "Oh, Gail, I know you've done this before. How about just stepping in and filling out your term?" And so I did that, and then I was elected to serve another term. So I started out right there. I served as secretary, and by that time they had divided the position, or right at that time they divided the position, so they had a secretary and a registrar. And so I did that position, and things had changed just a little bit, and we had a little bit more structure, and then I served as area treasurer. And what a heartwarming experience that is, to get these contributions from the groups and send back receipts. You know, it was not always the $100 contributions or $50 contributions, but, you know, $1.19, you know, from a small group, you know, that sent maybe two contributions a year. It's like you knew what a sacrifice it was. I realized, too, it's a sacrifice for the groups that send $100. And boy, those kind of contributions are really needed. But it's all of us participating. I've seen, when I've gotten to be the delegate and could see the big picture, the really big picture, I could see that everybody's contribution is essential, whether it's the $100 contribution or the $1.19, or whether it's the small voice in the back of the room or somebody that's speaking from the podium that has this great idea. It's all of us together doing this thing of Alcoholics Anonymous and keeping us going. After I was the treasurer, I sort of stopped doing service. Larry was also doing service, and he was elected to be the area chair, and I didn't feel like both of us in the same family should necessarily be serving as officers at the same time. So I sort of just did whatever needed to be, anybody needed some help with, and they would call on me. And I became the archives chair, because our archives chair rotated, and nobody on the committee wanted to be the chair, and so they asked me if I might be willing to step in and just kind of help out. We started, on the committee, when I got there, we talked about starting an old-timers meeting. This was a committee of the area assembly, and we started wanted to start an old-timers meeting where all the speakers had over 30 years sobriety. And at the time, in the 80s, 30 years sobriety was quite a while. And so we got that organized, and this year they're going to be celebrating the 25th annual Roots meeting of the committee and of the San Diego Imperial area. And we've had people with 40 and 50 plus years sobriety speak there. It's been just a wonderful experience for us to remember the history of our own area. And after that, I sort of dropped out of general service, and then I got a little bit active in intergroup, which was kind of a totally different structure, but very, very good and necessary too. And there was we were using an answering service to answer the phones at the central office, and it wasn't working very well. Sometimes people would call the central office and they would either get no answer, or the answering service would answer inappropriately, or they wouldn't get somebody to do the 12-step call. And so Larry and another past delegate in the San Diego area talked about having AA groups take that responsibility of answering the phones from 9 p.m. at night until 9 a.m. the next morning when the central office would open up. I thought, I don't think this is going to work, honestly, I don't. But, you know, I'm just a worker bee, you know, so if they think it's going to work, you know, I'll kind of help and do whatever I can to support the idea. And but Larry and Gary were both very enthusiastic about this idea and getting AA members to answer the phones, and surely we would take care of those 12-step calls. So Larry was working a lot, but he did some help. But Gary and I started visiting groups to line up groups to take a commitment to answer the phones one night a month from 9 p.m. to 9 a.m. the next morning. And to my surprise, groups were interested in doing this and really wanted to take this responsibility and provide people for these 12-step calls. And that started in the early 90s and continues to this day. I mean, there have been times when it's they really have to put out a call for groups to fill in. You know, it's only 31 groups we need, you know, for each month. But for the most part, the phones have been answered by AA members for all these years now. And it's been a great service and a great experience to be part of starting that that committee. I sort of got back into general service because our home group didn't have anybody that was kind of available to be a GSR. And so the guy, actually it was our area delegate who was also a member of our home group, he said, "Oh, Gail, why don't you be the GSR?" I said, "Oh, no, somebody with newer, you know, that hasn't had a lot of service experience. Somebody that needs that experience should do that job." But there was just kind of nobody available and willing, you know, and I said, "Well, I'll do it until somebody else kind of steps up to the plate," you know. And so I was elected to be the GSR for my home group, and then I was doing that for about 6 months, and then put my name in the hat. We have, for our committee assignments to be a member of a committee, we just put our name in the hat at the area assembly, and we're drawn from the hat to serve on committees. And so I was drawn from the hat to serve on the literature committee. And by the end of the year, we had to elect a new chair of the committee, and there wasn't anybody there except the outgoing chair and myself. So I didn't really want to be the chair of the committee, and I said, "Well, I'll do it until somebody else, you know, comes along, until we get more members, and somebody else will take that position." So I started doing that. For one thing, I had no idea what to do as a literature committee chair. There were some written guidelines, so I got those out and I read that, and then I thought, well, we can talk about the literature. That's what we'll do. We're the literature committee. We'll figure out, you know, what the literature says. We'll review the pamphlets, you know, maybe make a recommendation if we think something should be changed or updated. I thought, this is a good plan. So we started, and to my surprise, I really enjoyed that commitment, and I ended up getting people from the hat, from the assembly, to serve on that committee that stayed almost the whole 2 years. And we did review the literature, and we did talk about the literature at the area assembly meetings, and we had this great literature display, and talked about the foreign literature that was being developed in the big book, especially the translations, and it was a great commitment. Well, then at the end of that term, we had our area elections, and somebody told me I should make myself available, you know, for an officer position. I said, "Oh no, I've already been the secretary and the treasurer, and I'm not really interested in being anything else, you know." Well, one thing led to another, and I finally said, Larry and some other people said, "Well, when they ask you if you're available, can you say no?" And I thought, you know, I'm not working. I have, you know, things that I do in my group and stuff, but I really do have the time. It's just that I think somebody else should do it, you know. It shouldn't be me. But I could not say that I really was not available. So I did make myself available, and I ended up being the alternate delegate in that election. And then the next election, 2 years later, I was elected to be the area delegate. All of those things, I had no idea. Every job that I had in AA, I had no idea what I was doing. As Suzette kind of mentioned too, you know, I grew into the position, and some things I, particularly the delegate position, I feel like I never really did learn very well. But what I know about AA and what I know about service in general, let alone general service, is that we all do just make our contribution. But we all are responsible. You know, I just dragged my feet through everything that I did in AA. But when I really jumped in and finally took the commitment, I was really excited about it and liked doing it. I don't know why I was so reluctant, but I know that that's common among us, you know, that just taking on a responsibility is just something that makes us either afraid, or that I don't think I can do it, I can't do it as well as somebody else could do it, so-and-so could do that job much better than I could. But it's like I'm the person that's being called at the moment. You know, it's like, this is the thing that God wants me to do right at this moment. And sometimes, you know, I take a lot of prodding to finally make that decision and make a commitment to actually do the job that I've been asked to do. You know, in Bill's story in the Big Book, he talks about having that mountaintop experience in Towns Hospital, where he said, if there is a God, would he show himself? You know, and he had this, like he was on the top of a mountain, and this clean wind blew through him. And but he said he got a vision of a society of drunks. It's not exactly those words in the Big Book, but I read those words someplace in one of the books. I don't know if it was A.A. Comes of Age or Bill W. or one of those books, but he got this vision of a society of drunks. And of course, we know that as Alcoholics Anonymous today. But there was Bill by himself, but he had this idea, all of a sudden, that he could sort of see this procession of drunks coming along, and one person helping another. He could help one person, and that person in turn could help another, and then they in turn could help others, until there was this society of Alcoholics Anonymous, the society of drunks. Well, in 1951, the first conference started, and Bill had some struggles getting that going and getting that idea going, because people didn't think, you know, some of the board members and even other people who had long-term sobriety in AA really didn't think getting people from all over the U.S. and Canada to come to a conference once a year was really going to be practical, that they were going to be interested in what went on at the board level, at the general service office level, or that, you know, they might make probably inappropriate suggestions or, you know, not really get it about how the work should be done. After all, these trustees had been there for all this time, you know, since the early 40s, up until, you know, the 50s there. And they really knew what was going on, but it's like they'd come through all this trial and error. And I'm sure they couldn't imagine how just the average drunk might be able to participate in keeping Alcoholics Anonymous going. But Bill had this idea that it really needed to be our responsibility. The average drunk, the average person, the average member of Alcoholics Anonymous had to be participating in this thing or it would not continue. And Dr. Bob was soon ready to die off the scene. And Bill knew his own mortality also. And of course, later on, he, 71, he died of emphysema. But at any rate, in 1951, they started this conference with I don't know how many areas they had at that time. It certainly wasn't 93, but it was, you know, quite a number. And they had the first conference in 51, and then in 1952, they added more delegates. And then they started the rotation, so that in 1953, they had new delegates to replace the panel one, which was 1951. So in 53, they had half of the delegates were new. In 54, the other half of the delegates were new. Those were the 4 years that were samples. In 1955, they met in St. Louis. And that's when the trustees and Bill Wilson turned over Alcoholics Anonymous to the fellowship. And he said in this, and it's all documented here in AA Comes of Age, but he said about 5,000 AA members and their families and friends were seated in the Kiel Auditorium at St. Louis. All of the U.S. and Canadian provinces were represented. And here, the General Service Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous was about to take over the custody of AA's traditions in the guardianship of its world services. So we were about to be responsible for Alcoholics Anonymous ourselves. So there was Bill, and he, in turn, when he did that and turned it over to all of the fellowship, he stepped down off the stage to represent that he was now just one of us members. But he said what happened there was The total effect was that 5,000 people got a vision of AA such as they had never known before. They were exposed to the main outlines of AA history. And he goes on to explain a little bit about that history and how AA was got going up to that point. But this vision that those 5,000 got was the vision of AA's service. And that original vision that Bill had about the society of drunks now expanded into this vision that these 5,000 people got of Alcoholics Anonymous service and each one of us being responsible for it. You know, in Bill's whole life, his driving force was that Alcoholics Anonymous would continue in the future. And that has become my own vision, if I can say it that way. My own driving force that AA should continue beyond me. It continued beyond Bill and Dr. Bob and those trustees that were active at that time because of the General Service Conference. Because all of us together, whether you're just out here being a GSR or a member of your group, letting your GSR know how you feel about an issue so that he or she can take it to the assembly, your delegate can take it to the conference, and we can come up with a new pamphlet or revise. It should be sitting in a cell or make this new animation video that's going to be. We all participate in what Alcoholics Anonymous does. It belongs to us. We become responsible and we take ownership and possession of it. And we ensure that the future of AA will be here for the generations to come. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John.
Thanks very much, Gail. Our next presenter is also from San Diego, California. Help me welcome past trustee with the General Service Board, Larry.
I'd like to thank Tim. I'm Larry, and I'm an alcoholic. The members of the Young People's Committee in Arizona for inviting me to be here today, and I'd like to just thank you for the experience of being here. There's something strong and very profound, at least for me in my own little head, has occurred to me today, and it's something I've always known, and it's always been a part of something new today. And that has mainly to do with responsibility. I just guess I'll save that till the end. But there is something about what's happened here at this get-together, this convention, that has given me hope for the future and a memory of my own past. I got sober the first time in 1969 around Thanksgiving. I had been on a 10-day, well, it was actually before then. I had 6 weeks of sobriety, and I fell off the wagon, thought I could drink like other people. And if you knew my history at the time, at the beginning of that 6 weeks, I had socks that would stand up on a corner by themselves. I didn't really have any underwear I could put on. My clothes were covered with cigarette burns, and I shook. I shook a lot. And I had been arrested for driving while intoxicated 3 times, and in a dozen car accidents, and even probably today, counting all the bad checks I wrote then, I may have written more bad checks in my life than good. My wife's been writing the checks for the last 20, 25 years or longer. So I'm 37 years, so. And I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said to the guy that answered the phone, I said, my name is Larry, and I think I might be an alcoholic. And Leo said I could come and talk to him, so I did. And then he got me to go to a meeting. And then I learned that one of the primary things that I learned about AA, I learned from Leo, from those people in Fargo, North Dakota, where I was going to school. And they just redid it a couple years later for me when I came back the last time. If the most important thing in my life to me is Alcoholics Anonymous, if I got my priorities right, then I may never take another drink. And I only hope that by the grace of God, that can be my priority, is to get to Alcoholics Anonymous to help another alcoholic. That's true, I'm a pastor of C, but there's one thing you need to know. I need to know more probably than you do, but I'll tell you that I read this in the AA Grapevine magazine, which at times has meant my very life to me. I read this there, that the highest you can get in Alcoholics Anonymous is sober, and that if you get any, you go any farther, you get any higher, you get to start over. And that's, I'm sober by grace, not because I did anything good. I'm still sober for the same reason. It's an unmerited gift. I received it through people just like you, through some of you already this week, and I've received my sobriety. Well, Gail told you a little bit about our service life there. I did love Alcoholics Anonymous, general service. I really don't know why, but I heard people arguing at the very first assembly I went to. They were arguing about who should have control of the letterhead paper. And some of the fellows seemed to have better arguments than the others. And for some reason, it interested me. There were a few other things that happened that day. And I met a couple of these older people that were so devoted to AA, and I said, it's a little different view on Alcoholics Anonymous than I had ever had before. A little bit later in time there, I became a GSR, and I have to tell you that when I was new in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when my sobriety started back in at the end, the very end, the last day of 1971, this last time. When I was new then, I met a man named Dave who was elected to be the Yankton, South Dakota GSR. And when he talked to me after the meeting, he was in tears that his group had trusted him. And I wanted to be a GSR ever since that time, to have that emotion and to be trusted by the members of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I was elected GSR, I was over in Ocean Beach, I think it was at the Tuesday night discussion group. We went around the meeting and they needed a new GSR, so they asked if there was anybody in the room that had more than 2 years of sobriety. I raised my hand. And they said, well, you're our new GSR. So I didn't have quite the introduction to it, but I believe that what happened to me that night changed my life, that AA changed my life through being affected by people who devoted themselves by giving their time and their love to the future of AA in that way. General service isn't for everybody, really, and it may be not for everybody at a certain time in their sobriety. I had the time, and this was something that just set me going forward. And anyway, over a period of years, we were in and out of, we were sober, we moved back to South Dakota, we moved back to San Diego, and got to be elected GSR of my home group, and then finally one day they needed a treasurer. In those days we didn't have the third legacy procedure for every little thing we did like we do now in San Diego. Certainly in that day they said the treasurer had resigned. She didn't realize how much work there was to it and didn't have that much time. And was there somebody there that would be willing to do that job? And I wasn't going to stand up and say I could do that job. I didn't know if I could. I said, I wondered, what if I could? And there was a man named Hubbard sitting a couple rows in front of me who I'd been at a couple area committee meetings, I think, because my wife was the secretary, and I just rode along, and he looked He looked back at me, he looked at them, and he looked back and he said, "How about Larry? He's an honest man." It's a little... Things had started to change for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. At least there were a few people who thought that I might be honest after all those bad checks and all the lies. Well, I was nearly expelled from college, and my advisor told the dean on that day that they made that decision. They really decided to do it, but they failed. But he decided, anyway, my advisor told the dean while I was in the room with his finger pointed right at my nose, "That man is an alcoholic and he's a pathological liar." And so I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with a lot of heavy stuff in my mind, a lot of selfishness, a lot of fear. I never lied if it was only because I was afraid to tell the truth. And in Alcoholics, I started Anonymous, especially in General Service, I started to learn how to get along with people. I started to like what happened, and I really wanted to be part of General Service. So I was going to do that. I think I intuitively knew I had to get along with these people. I couldn't offend them. I couldn't lie to them. And then I started, and I learned this early in AA, that I could trust the people that spoke in the ancient South Dakota meeting to tell the truth. I believed them, and I believed people in Alcoholics Anonymous the same way. And in Dr. Silkworth's medical opinion in the big book, he said one of the very most important things in line in that book is that he told the world that you could trust, you could believe them. Everything they said about themselves was true. And so I started to believe Alcoholics Anonymous, and anyway, I fell in love with everything in AA, and I served as a GSR, and when I came back, I got to be the treasurer, and then I got to do those contribution experiences, holding in one hand $300 from a large group from an affluent area of the city, and one for a couple bucks from a little group someplace in a place not so affluent. And I can tell you which one of those two brought tears to my eyes, but they were equally important. They're kind of like us. We're all equal. We need AA. And we also need AA justice. No one needs AA more than I do, and I don't need it any more than you do. That's what makes us equal in my mind. So anyway, we got all this going on. I got to serve as delegate. I served as treasurer, area chairman. When I was area chair, the Spanish-speaking groups of our area came back to the assembly, and they invited me to come to their district meetings. It was District 15. And I attended their district meeting two or three times in a row. And then I just loved going back to that meeting. I spoke very little Spanish, but I could feel the sincerity of those people. And they were not participating in the area assembly meeting. They had a separate meeting and made a little report at the end of their separate meeting when we had area assemblies. And during the time I was area chairman, they started sitting through the area assembly in the company of the English-speaking members and whispering translations to each other so they understood what was being said. And the next thing I knew, when I was delegate, I had to give up part of the time for my second delegate's report because area had to decide whether it would now buy translation equipment of the type that's commonly used today. It was just a marvelous experience. But my heart was even more full as Alcoholics Anonymous, and eventually I was elected to be the delegate. Hardest job I've ever done in AA was be the area chairman. You're kind of sitting there, you must maintain neutrality. Everybody's heartfelt feelings are coming at you from all different directions. They're not the same. But I found out the power of Alcoholics Anonymous is that people care enough to feel the way they do, to express what they feel, and if the area assembly can, and our area committee could, if we included all the voices, come to good decisions with substantial unanimity that would bring us through to another year, to another time. And sometimes they would be reversed. The General Service Conference is no different. When I served as delegate, my second year as delegate, the theme was anonymity, our spiritual foundation. And I thought of anonymity when it was read last night, when people read the introductions about the internet and using last names or your face, full face on the internet, and how people talked about it kind of in a joking way on Facebook. But it's getting the attention it needs. Somehow, if AA is to survive into the future, we have to maintain our anonymity tradition. I got a pretty colorful past. And some people in Alcoholics Anonymous make mine look dull. And if that all that news gets out there about all of us Alcoholics Anonymous members, it's pretty hard for the public to digest in some ways. But together, here, quietly and anonymously, we can see that our AA message, which is not a heavy weight, is carried to each other and fostered in the atmosphere in which it can move forward, is recreated every year, every month, every week, almost every day in Alcoholics Anonymous, through a rotation, for one thing. All the principles of AA General Service expressed in the traditions and in the concepts for world service focus on one aspect, humility. Us knowing that we cannot have Alcoholics Anonymous unless we have each other, and then for a profoundly large number of us, that we cannot have this without the blessing or grace of a power greater than ourselves. And always remember, what I say with regard to a power greater than myself is only how I feel. It's not a reflection of anybody's group conscience, only mine. But I can't talk without talking about that. So when I served as delegate, these things, there was a public information. I was on the public information committee. That the theme was anonymity. We did a lot of radio spots and public service announcement, television public service announcements. There was a lot of discussion. My home area felt that at that time, the end of the public service announcements, the television one said, "Alcoholics Anonymous, it works." And that was at the end of all those announcements. And our area felt, and I felt, that that's a statement, a kind of a promotional statement. They use it for Zippo lighters. I remember at the time I read it, I saw involved in form of healthcare, and a part of healthcare for humans, but I read on a veterinary journal, and artificial insemination procedure was advertised because it worked too. And just recently I heard something about something else that it all works. Whatever you see advertised, a lot of times is pronounced that this really works. And anyway, we don't make claims about ourselves in AA. Well, they didn't remove it then, but I think all of the public service announcements now, at least the ones that for television, do not contain those words. Conscience keeps coming up. Conscience. What's going to ensure AA's future?
A couple minutes.
So I've been told 2 minutes. Oh my gosh. So when I served on the Board of Trustees, I was elected to be trustee at large. I served on the Public Information Committee. I served on the AA Grapevine Board for 2 years during the introduction of the Lavinia magazine, a profoundly powerful experience to see that come into being. That's the initiation of the board. The conference said they wanted to have one if it was possible. Some words similar to that. The board made it possible. The board took the risk. They knew Lavinia would be a kind of a loser financially for probably many years to come, as it still is. And the Grapevine itself struggles all the time. If you don't have a subscription, buy a subscription. If you don't read the grapevine, read it. What kind of a regular member who puts his fellowship first would not subscribe to the monthly journal? Huh? Well, I know. Nobody has to do anything in AA. I don't read all the articles either. But I have subscribed. My initial, the international experience that every trustee at large has given me so many memories of how important your contributions are, your conscience, and most of all, how important it is that we live our traditions, that we live our concepts for world service, and that we actually practice the principles of the AA steps in our daily lives, because what we do ensures AA's future around the world. Everyone looks all around the world to what happens in the mother land of Alcoholics Anonymous, the home of Bob and Bill. They look at us. We are their example, and we are their future. This year's conference theme, 2011, AA, the responsibility for AA's future. Let it begin with us. It begins with you, not with me. I'm all done. I'm all washed up. It's been 13 years since I served on the AA Board of Trustees. I have a little experience to share, but what I learned overseas was so profound. I was invited to help celebrate the 50th anniversary of AA in Brazil, in Rio de Janeiro. And part of my job was to carry the United States flag around the outside of this huge stadium that they were all in. And they took them in alphabetical order. So U comes way towards the end of the alphabet, and people were plotting and standing up and making a lot of noise for every country, especially those in South America. And then the Brazil flag went around in the beginning, and everybody whooped and jumped up and down and made noise like they do in these meetings of the Young People's Convention. and then I started my little walk while they played our Star Spangled Banner. It's not political. It's just a flag. What they were looking at was not a country, but a source where AA began. And they never sat down. I walked all the way around that thing, and they were still standing up. And there was still as much noise when I finished as when I began. Whatever sacrifice AA has ever asked me to make has been paid back a thousandfold. Not in money or huge automobiles, but by golly, I've had the same wife for 37 years. I got a driver's license with my own picture on it. I retired from a job which I could have lost in the beginning due to my drinking and other things. I retired from that job 4 years ago, and they asked me to come back and still help them. And so I'm busy working. I'm busy carrying the AA message, and I'm so pleased that I was asked to come here and share with you just a little bit. There are so many stories about AA overseas, I wish I had time to share. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Larry. Our final presenters are from Phoenix and Tucson. Please help me welcome District 8 DCMC Jim and District 11 DCMC Dana.
How's everybody? My name is Jim D, and I am an alcoholic. I don't know how we're going to do it. I'll just start first and then you go.
Hi, everyone. My name is Dana L. And almost blew that one up. And I'm an alcoholic. And you're right. I don't know how this is going to work. So
I'll just.
Hi, you're it.
Yeah. My sobriety date is October 1st, 2005. And my home group is the Happy Valley Group in Glendale, Arizona. And we meet on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock. And my service commitment started. I was 3 months sober. That was a brand new group, and it was our first group elections. And they asked, now this GSR position, who wants to be a GSR? And I raised my hand. I had no idea what I was doing. My sponsor looked at me and then at his wife. They're the ones that started the group, and they just shrugged their shoulders and said, all right. It was the best thing I ever did. Had no clue what I was doing, and for the first time in my life, I took a flyer on something and went with it. I'll never forget, Martin just got up and left. At my very first sub-district meeting, Martin scared the crap out of me. I had no idea what was going on. He was also, at our first assembly, the first panel chair. I was on the finance panel. And again, 4 months sober at the time, I'm on a finance panel. These people are nuts. I don't understand what's going on, but I loved it. What I've done since then is just being of service with these service positions. I've been the DCM and now currently the DCMC. And I've gotten hooked on the idea of doing something that you don't know what to do. And the feeling that you get walking through it, and on the backside, that's growth. And I just want to continue doing that. In my home group positions, I've been the GSR, I'm the past treasurer, and now I'm the greeter. And I'm working my way backwards in the group. And I tell you what, that's a pretty awesome thing to do. To watch the example that we have set within the group level, to see this new rotation come in and take over, and for us to know the principles of the program, to step back and let it happen. That's a powerful message in its own. And my goal is to work out to be the cigarette butt picker up. And that's next rotation. So I'm going to turn it over to Dana and let him start.
Okay, I've been told that I have a time limit here, so I'm going to make it quick. Hi, everyone. My name is Dana. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's October the 28th of 1985, and for that I'm grateful. So that's right. I just celebrated my anniversary. And my anniversary would have been a few months earlier if I would have maintained this program a little better, but we all have a tendency to work this program the way we do before we actually get it, and mine took a little time. When I came into the program, though, it was instantly put upon me that I should try and see about getting involved, and part of getting involved was picking up the cigarette butts and cleaning out the ashtrays and washing the coffee cups and setting up chairs, and that was part of my initial service work. From there, I sort of moved into a different position, which was being a secretary at my home group. And my home group now is the Smoke-Free Nooners meeting here in Tucson, the Smoke-Free Nooners meeting place. Meetings all day long. The thing is as I went along with my service position as the secretary, I moved into another position as a chair. I moved into another position as a treasurer. And I continued on with that service work and worked along. Unlike Jim, I was told that I had to have 2 years before I could step into a GSR position. And so as soon as I obtained that 2 years, they were having our elections at our home group, and they said, does anybody want to be the GSR? And I had heard about what a GSR does, and I thought it would be a pretty prestige position. Little did I know at that time. But I rose my hand right away, and my sponsor sort of nudged me in the side and said, what are you doing? Apparently, he didn't think that that was such a good idea at that time, but I thought it was. And I tell you what, it was a learning experience. The thing about it was, is I didn't get a chance to complete that position. Ended up doing a little detour and due to some issues in my history, had to do a little time with the Arizona Department of Corrections. But while I was there, I continued to stay in contact with GSO. I continued to stay in contact with the intergroup offices, and I continued to stay in contact with people on the outside. I got somebody to write me while I was there, and stayed in service in any way I could possibly do. When I got out, what was neat about that is I knew I had to find a home group and get back involved, and I did find a home group, and once again my illustrious position was coffee maker. And after a period of time, there was elections again, and I wanted to be a GSR. One of the reasons why I wanted to be a GSR, because I knew that the GSR was a person who represented the group. And I wanted the people in within the Arizona area to know how important our group was. Still needing a little humility even after that time. But I wanted to carry the message of what was given to me in this program back to others. And I thought that this was a way to do it. And in going to the assemblies and learning what a GSR is all about, it opened my eyes to a lot of things. And what a wonderful thing it was, you know, to begin to understand what the AA program is all about, to understand that it is the group. The group is the foundation of our network. And that from the group, it goes to the area. And from the area, it goes to New York. And we have a delegate who carries that information for us. And what was neat about that is that I got to be the person who was representing our group to that area assembly, who could share that information with New York, and what a wonderful thing. As I moved along, I went to our district meetings, and at our district meeting, there was a total of three of us at this district meeting. We had two GSRs and our DCM. And one of the GSRs was the secretary, and I became the treasurer for our district. And what happened from that point was that we began to reach out to other groups and stuff. That district is flourishing rather nicely now. They have an average of 6 to 8 GSRs that attend that district meeting because of the outreach that was started from just a couple of people that were in that district. What happened from there is there was an election later on, 2 years after that rotation was over, and I stepped up into the DCM position. From the DCM position, I was able to carry a little bit more information to our delegate, still being able to carry it. What I found was I was a messenger, and which was cool for me. I didn't mind that. And what's really neat about that is that's what my responsibility is to be a liaison from my group, from my districts, from the area that I serve in Southern Arizona, to our delegate, to the Arizona area, to let them know what's going on here. And it's through the members of our fellowship that share their opinions and their ideas with us that we can take to them, and they can take it back to New York. We have a lot of people that in the Southern Arizona area that are very active within the program. We have situations that have occurred. There was a gentleman who's a DCM, he's here tonight, who found an issue with the traditions. And what was neat is he brought it to our attention in our district area. And that information was transferred on to our delegate. And our delegate took that to New York. And it had to do with an issue of breaking a tradition. And that's how it works. It starts with an individual who notices something. And you don't have to have 25 years in the program. You can have a few days in the program and say, hey, that doesn't seem right to me, and bring it up to other people within the program who have a little bit more time maybe, and they know a little bit more about what's going on, and it can travel up the line like that, or I should say down the line. And it travels down the line until, you know, something will be handled in whatever it's the issue is. But that's the way it works. It starts with the individual, and goes down the line until it gets to New York. If you have an issue, it doesn't have to stop with you. You know, bring it to somebody else's attention, your GSR's attention. They'll take it to their DCM. They'll take it to their DCMC, and that person will take it to the Arizona area, and that person will take it to our delegate. The Arizona area gives the information to our delegate, and that delegate takes it to New York. And you are represented in that way. You are represented in every way possible that we can think of through our DCMs that are here, through our DCMCs, through our delegate, through our trustees. You are our lifeblood. So keep coming back and become part of this. This is a wonderful fellowship, and it'll give you new insights to many things. So thank you for being here, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Jim and Dana. Here to read the responsibility statement, help me welcome Dave.
Hi, everyone. I'm a drunk. My name's Dave.
Hey, Dave.
Hi, folks. The reading that I was asked to do has gone from responsibility to unity back to responsibility. So that's good because I really practiced this one. This was actually written for this is a theme of the 1965 International Convention at Toronto. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible.
So we can take that off the stand and then we'll wrap it up when we're done. You want to bring it around?
Sorry.